sunshine from the night. The glory of the light brings evaporation. Morning fresh, oxygen peace. I take a deep breath of my mind's taking peace. I'm already late, so I'm not tripping coffee. Don't want a cigarette, cause it's the only savory. Walk into the store, cause I need a commodity. But suddenly it's my blood, like to hit the bottom. Cause I need to buy some food, some food for my dreads. I can't remember why, but I need a spool of thread. Well, a man with dirty dreads, he stepped around the corner. He asked me for a dime, a nickel or a quarter. I don't have any change, so I'm stepping along. But as I'm walking past, it seems to me a song. There's a whole new world. There's a hole in my bucket. There's a hole in your eyes. There's a hole in my bucket. There's a hole in my bucket. There's a hole in my bucket. There's a hole in your eyes. The day's picking up cause I'm humming this song.
Good evening. You are listening to 90.7 KBOO FM. This is your Hole in the Bucket, KBOO show on housing and homelessness. My name is Michael Anderson, and I'm joined in the studio tonight with my co-host, Jay Thiemeyer. Good evening, Jay.
Good evening. Michael and I just attended a PDC hearing about the 30% set aside of urban renewal money for affordable housing. And the question that I personally have as a person who isn't really versed with the history of PDC and the ins and outs of urban renewal money is, what are the guarantees that PDC is going to fall in line with allocating this money effectively to get affordable housing? I'm thinking of their history with the interstate rail, that there were these promises made that weren't followed up on. I'm thinking about South Waterfront, which is very confusing to me. Could you sort of put this in context, Michael?
Yes. What, Jay, I think the frustration that you just identified is the exact frustration felt by a lot of people throughout the city of Portland, and certainly from the Affordable Housing Now Coalition, which I'm a member. This is a central concern for us. We've been advocating now for several years for the Portland Development Commission to create a specific set-aside and benchmark to make sure they meet their affordable housing obligations, because historically there has been a legacy of promises made and promises unfulfilled. And I was the early efforts around Interstate Alliance to End Displacement, where there was all sorts of rhetoric. Side is we're working with City Council to say we have a reoccurring problem, a problem that aspirational goals to do things in affordable housing don't match up with the reality of what the city needs. With this set-aside, hopefully we're going to get a policy that will have the teeth, the income guidelines, to really make a difference to the people in need.
Right. Well, as the details are worked out, there's obviously going to have to be a lot of transparency and involvement of the affected people in that process. How is that going to be guaranteed? How is transparency going to be guaranteed?
Jay, this is one of those areas that I wish I could say we had reached a point of resolution and comfort. Right now, the Affordable Housing Now Coalition has been working very closely with Commissioners Eric Sten, Sam Adams, and Randy Leonard precisely on this issue, and I think all three commissioners identify this as a key issue, that there needs to be some teeth, some process where we can, as a community, know that these are not just pie-in-the-sky goals, that this is a serious intent that we're meeting. How that we would like it to happen from Affordable Housing Now's perspective is we'd like to see the city auditor take an annual look at PDC's budget, see how much money they are putting out, and see that 30% of that money is actually going to affordable housing and going to the income guidelines that where the need is.
You mean actual bricks and sticks, as you say?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think is important for our listeners out there to understand is urban renewal money is not magic do-anything money. There are some real limitations to what can be done. But what can be done is to actually build structures or to rehabilitate older affordable housing projects to make them good, safe, affordable places for families to thrive, for seniors and people with disabilities to live. And all that is possible with this urban renewal set-aside. The question is, will it be a piece of paper and a bunch of good wishes, or will it be a system that's going to not just direct the money, but make sure the money gets there and make sure the housing gets built?
You say there are strictures. Like what? You can't have rental assistance, for example. Right?
Yes.
What can't you do with urban renewal
money? Well, with urban renewal money, the concept is that you need to, and by Oregon constitutional law, there's limits where the money needs to be used for actual construction. So other uses beyond just affordable housing or building any type of housing could include roads and sewers. It could include, you know, bridge work, light rail, infrastructure. What it can't be used for is program money in the same sense. Or so, like a housing voucher is in some ways too ethereal of a use. Even though housing voucher is an excellent strategy to house people, this isn't the right pot for that. However, it is the right pot. We have buildings throughout the city that are in jeopardy. They are affordable housing now, but they have federal contracts that are about to expire such that all the residents who currently live in them, most seniors, people with disabilities, could be turned out in the street and those could be converted to condos. This is perfect money to preserve that housing, to help keep housing that works for people going, affordable, and part of the assets of the city.
Mm-hmm. To take a slightly different tangent, you know, somebody mentioned in this meeting about in California, in Santa Cruz and San Francisco, they can, when the 20-year limit on urban renewal money is reached, that they're obligated to spend 50% on affordable housing. Now, could you explain why that kind of ideal situation cannot happen here, just out of curiosity?
Well, in some ways it could happen here. That is a policy that we could pass in Portland. I think that our idea is that the 30% guideline is a first step from Affordable Housing Now's perspective. But ultimately, when you look at urban renewal, as a policy, the goal is to raise property value. That's the absolute intention of the policy. So the reason in California that they have that 50% criteria is they're saying, if we are using public funds for excess of 20 years in the same neighborhood, in the same area, it's only right that we use half those funds to at least help the residents of that area stay in the neighborhood, benefit from the prosperity, reap the benefits of 20-plus years of public investment. Where we haven't had that same kind of 50% requirement in our set-aside, we see that the 30% here from Portland is a great first step, and for all practical purposes is going to double, at least double, the amount of money that PDC has been allocating to affordable housing on an annual basis.
Right. Can you explain, for example, I know Randy Leonard really supports affordable housing for working people. Can you describe how responsive PDC is to that and what the debate is around that, the percentages?
That's a really interesting conversation to have, because first, just to nitpick on words, and I do think that this is an important nitpick, there is a concept of something called workforce housing, which is considered separate from affordable housing. And workforce housing, for our listeners out there, basically means for people who are earning somewhere between $48,000 a year to upwards of $120,000 a year. In other words, as my friend Ian Slingerlin from the Community Alliance of Tenants says, you might call that manager force housing, not workforce housing. We really resent that term at Affordable Housing Now, because the fact is, if you go to any homeless shelter in town, you're going to find 50% of the people there are working. If you go into any subsidized affordable housing project, with the exception of people with disabilities and seniors, you've got people who are all working. They're all scraping by, who are absolutely part of our workforce. So we think that definition is sort of a little bit of wordplay that implies that those who live in affordable housing aren't working, when in fact they are. They're often working 2-3 jobs and still having to make a choice between rent and can I put food on the table. So, going back to how this money's going to be used and how we're going to break it down and what's best for Portland, what we need is housing for those who are working, but their wages still leave them woefully behind private market prices.
Right. Oh, what about the debate between rentals and home ownership? I mean, what does that look like? That's kind of puzzling to me. It seems like two obvious needs that are sort of contending with each other.
Well, it's interesting. I often think when we look at worthy causes, that because we've been in an environment of scarcity, because the federal government has ran away from their responsibility to provide affordable housing, because we've seen problems at the state and local level of providing enough resources for affordable housing, that different worthy, important interests are pitted against one another, whether intentionally or not. So all of a sudden, like at today's hearing, we had some community members speaking about a very crucial issue, which is the home ownership gap that exists for African Americans, Latinos, and Native Americans. And they really want a lot of the set-aside money to go to that important cause, which, you know, as Affordable Housing Now, we definitely support closing the home ownership gap for people of color. At the same time, we have these urgent needs. I think one woman in her testimony said it so eloquently today. She said, you know, home ownership is the American dream. But realistically, we have people who are living outside, who are living in cars, families, without even a place to call home. So from Affordable Housing Now's perspective, whereas we think home ownership absolutely needs to be expanded to include all people of all ethnic and racial backgrounds equally, we feel that there's tons of people of color, of others, in the rental housing community who right now can't even get to that basic, I have a place to lay my head each night that's safe and sound.
The astonishing thing is that although it's not grabbing the headlines these days, the homeless population continues to expand.
No, and I think that's exactly right, and that's partly why we think that the timing for the set-aside, it's probably long overdue, but it's extremely welcome right now to see City Council take this leadership, to see the Portland Development Commission stepping up and embracing this idea. Now, granted, we had to put a lot of advocacy pressure first, but I think there's a general recognition that the way we currently allocate money in our society is leaving people at the lowest incomes too far behind, and we're beginning to see fractures in the very basic things that we care about and value in society. I mean, there's always been people who've been swept under the rug, and that's what this show's been a lot about, is trying to make clear, hey, you can't sweep people under the rug. But all of a sudden, there's no rug in the world big enough to cover up the economic deficits that a lot of people experience night in, night out here in Portland.
Well, later I'll have some remarks about James Chaussee, the homeless, mentally ill person who was stomped by the police in the Pearl, 13th and Everett. To me, that was sort of an emblematic incident because you, given the setting of the Pearl with its lavish, upscale character and the needs of this person who was not, you know, you have to have funding for appropriate monitored housing, et cetera. Funding is being cut. You have fallout like the one of his, you know, he's being stomped. Anyway, the contrast between his situation as a homeless person and Pearl was pretty striking to me.
Well, and I think that to me that gets back to some of the concepts that we see with the semantics around calling one thing workforce housing and another thing affordable housing. There's no question, as the federal government has cut their money, as governments in general have run away from their responsibility to help seniors, people with disabilities, young families have a place in our society, the real impulse has been to demonize, right? So all of a sudden, here's James walking out in the street as a homeless person, and even though he did nothing, because he was homeless, he was a demon. Because he was homeless, he symbolized some vague threat. So partly what we see is we don't need to just turn this around in terms of putting dollars to the problem. That's a really fundamental piece. But we also need to rearrange our blame. Right now, the blame goes on the individual. Oh, you know, such and such made a choice. They decided to hit the bottle. You know, they deserve to be, you know, on skid row. Or is the problem that the federal government doesn't put the money that we need in the right places? Or that local programs, until we've had this set aside, we haven't had an urban renewal policy that was responsive to housing needs. So all of this, I think, is part of the dialogue of pushing the set aside forward.
Well, we both went to this Community Action Directors conference, and it was interesting to me to hear people talking in terms of social Darwinism, survival of the fittest, that, you know, wise decisions, good genes was actually said by somebody in one of those groups that I heard about, that people are putting the blame on people who are just not surviving. In spite of the fact that it's because of mental illness and things that they have no control over, it's an interesting shift in our social consciousness.
Yeah, isn't it funny, too, that some of the people, the same people who talk about survival of the fittest, also talk about we got to stop teaching evolution in schools, right? So it is like this little paradigm that we see. You know,
they're also well taken care of.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's very easy to be a noble person and sit astride your steed and talk about how lowly all the serfs are for walking on the ground. But, you know, if you got off your horse, you'd be walking too.
Well, let me, you know, one thing that I'm really concerned about is I look at the interstate development situation. I look at South Waterfront, and I'm wondering what on earth is going to be, you know, how it's, what, for example, Affordable Housing Now intends to do. Just keep their feet to the fire, keep PDC feet to the fire, as far as having these periodic reviews and so on, keep transparency in place.
Well, you know, I guess what I would say to our listeners out there is we're not quite there yet, you know, as far as Affordable Housing Now having achieved our advocacy goals to get the feet to the fire, as it were. We still do not have some clear indication from City Council what income guidelines will look like, what the accountability guidelines will look like. So our first step is actually continuing to put the pressure and the advocacy with the members of City Council to get them to have this transparency, to get them to put accountability measures in that are meaningful and that actually will make the money go where it's supposed to go.
Right. Is there a city council meeting coming up that the public can attend?
Yes, absolutely. I would urge all of KBOO's listening audience, if you're a regular listener to Hole in the Bucket, if this is your first time, there is a wonderful opportunity to get civically involved. It's next Wednesday, October 18th, 9:30 a.m. at City Hall. That's located at 1220 Southwest 4th Avenue. If you haven't been to City Hall before, I think you're going to see a great turnout of the Affordable Housing Now advocacy community. We turned out, about 8,500 people today at the PVC hearing, and I would look for a similar strong showing at City Hall. But the City Council will be voting next Wednesday on the set-aside, so come out, get involved. People can contact me at Mike, M-I-K-E, at CDN Portland, that's CDN Portland.org, and to get involved, or you can give me a call at 503-335-9884. That's 503-335-9884. Jay, I just want to say that as much as there's some really crucial details to go, on the set aside to make sure, just as you're saying, it's transparent, there's accountability, it's really serving the greatest need. We are also have really advanced this this advocacy push right now on urban renewal. If you'd asked me 14 months ago, could we do this? I would have said, well, Jay, I'm not so sure. But opportunity has presented itself. And so for you cable listeners out there, this is time to help push this over the edge, help make this set-aside policy something that's going to make a difference so we don't have the unmet promises of the interstate urban renewal area and Southwest waterfront.
For details, they could get the CDN website, too.
Yeah, you can go online to www.cdnportland.org and look on the left side of your screen for the Affordable Housing Now button, and you'll get the full information. Now, I think we are about time for a pledge break here. We're asking you to get involved, be socially active. We're also asking you to support this great radio station. I'll tell you what, there's nowhere else in the media market where you'd hear coverage of this set aside. And this is just one of the issues that we highlight here at KABLU. So, Noah, you want to take us away to Pledge Central?
Absolutely, and you can get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO if you live outside the City of Roses. And to have more details about this, we have Marlise and Jamie available in Membership Central.
Hello.
Hello there. Hi, Marlise.
Hi, Jamie. Jamie used to be our news director here, interim news director. Mm-hmm. She came back to help with Pledge Drive.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been here.
And miss it.
Yeah. I've been working, so I had to stay away.
503-232-8818.
Or 1-toll-free, 1-877-500-KABLU. That's 5266. And it's really interesting, Marlise, you were even taking notes, listening to the program that's ongoing right now, Hole in the Bucket, about affordable housing, and folks here that are waiting to answer telephones when you call 503-232-8818. Right now, they want to be talking to you, but during the program, the program itself is sparking conversation here in this room about affordable housing.
Absolutely,
and that's what radio like KABLU is all about. It empowers people to do things, take action, or discuss things like is happening right now.
Right, and people have been asked if they want more information, they can go to the website, mm-hmm. they can go to the meetings that are affecting them, they can find out about what's happening in their neighborhood. That is the beauty of community radio, because it is an opportunity for people to come together as community, for people to have a forum to say what they find important, and also a call to action, which is, affordable housing is it's such a huge subject, but we are all so incredibly affected by it.
Sure. Discussions, forums, call to action. I call it empowerment.
Yeah.
And I think that really underscores what KABLU is all about.
It really is.
And to talk about housing, that is a big challenge for a lot of folks. And talk about challenges. We have a challenge for everyone out there to help us raise $175,000. Think we can do it?
We can do it. Right now we have an increment of that. It's $300. That's our goal for this particular program.
Okay.
Yes, $300. And we're here having, like you said, we're discussing. We're having a little bit of food provided by Bamboo Grove. And we are looking for the phones to ring.
And if you're out there discussing housing issues like they are on the program and like we are here in this room, you know that KABLU is causing that.
And another
thing. So call us.
Yeah. What's the number? 503-232-8818.
Same slowly.
Yes.
1-877-500-KBOO.
One thing I was going to say is, if you're ever listening to KABLU, you can often call the reception.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can get facts about the program that you might have missed. Like, say someone mentioned a website or something, and oftentimes you can call and check in on those things, and that's a pretty interesting resource. What I'm getting to is that KABLU is actually your resource as a person in the community to have. It's yours.
A resource about everything from affordable housing to food.
Music. So food.
Food.
That's right. News.
Uh-huh.
You know, community calendar, the bluegrass calendar. There's such a variety, and not everybody likes every single show. You know, that's okay. Some people love the bluegrass and listen to absolutely nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Some people listen to whatever, the news and nothing else. But what we're asking is for you to support the program that you listen to for free until you become a member.
And right now, folks that are listening to us, they're listening to the program, so why aren't you calling? I challenge you. Give us a call.
It's 1-877-500-KBOO. We really enjoy ourselves here. We have fun. It's a really
great
good
bunch
feeling.
Of people.
Yeah, and come down. Hey, that's another good idea. People can come into the studio. We're at 20 Southeast 8. Have some
just
good,
off Burnside.
Good dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Make your pledge here in person and see how everything works.
Of course, now we're talking, while we're here talking, people are discussing housing, but that's great. But hey, hold off the discussion there and give us a call, 503-232-8818. I want to hear at least two, three phones ring. One would be nice right about now. Now would be a good time.
And membership is how much? It's $40, right?
$40.
And that gets you the program guide
every
month. And you also get a variety of discounts from local businesses who also support KBOO.
And pride of ownership.
That's right. I tell you what, it took me a while, I have to admit, when I came to town to actually make the phone call. I listened for a while. I thought, all right, everyone else is going to call in. You know what I mean? I didn't really understand the value of calling in myself because it's something that's on the air. I mean, it's going to be there anyway, right?
Right.
But when I made the call, I really did. I had that sense of ownership, and it really made a huge difference. No joke.
So there you go. Testimony. Testimonial from Marlise. Marlise Franklin, who anchors the news and also does the food show.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many other interesting programs, movie reviews, veterans programs, just music, jazz, bluegrass.
You can find it on the program guide when it comes to you once a month in your mailbox. When you become a member, you will receive the program guide. It's $40. You can also have an annual pledge of a monthly deduction of $5 from your checking account. I hate to say deduction, but it's actually, you know, a $5 gift every month.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't even notice
you
it.
You don't miss it.
No. It's 503-232-8818.
And outside of our local toll area, 1-877-500-5266. That's 1-877-500-KBOO.
And we're going to go back now and talk more about affordable housing. And I'm really excited to hear more about it because I don't get to hear it anywhere else. Thank you.
Keep those ears on.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back. This is Michael Anderson. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM on your dial, community radio. And this is Hole in the Bucket, and I'm here with Jake Demeyer again. And we're joined on the phone by Andy Miller, the Senior Program Manager for Portland's Bureau of Housing and Community Development. Good evening, Andy.
Good evening, Michael.
Hi. Hey. How are you doing? Andy, thank you for joining us tonight. Jay and I have been talking about this potential 30% set-aside, and I have a couple questions for you. Working for the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, that perhaps you can help our listeners understand what the impact of the set-aside would be. And I'm going to start with a question. Traditionally, what type of affordable housing work has been done by PDC with urban renewal funds?
Historically, actually, PDC has provided a range of affordable housing development. We've come to understand that in the last 8 years or so, they've dedicated approximately 20%, depending on how you slice the numbers, somewhere between 18 and 22% of tax increment finance resources for the development of affordable housing. And that's produced a range of different types of housing units. They have expended some funds and more funds in the past few years than ever before for housing for our lowest income, disabled population, folks who are formerly coming out of homelessness, whose incomes are in the range of 0 to 30% of the area median income. And just to put some context to those numbers, someone who is on what people commonly refer to as disability or SSI payments, who has been found to be permanently disabled, earns approximately between $500 and $600 a month. That puts them at about 17% of the median family income area. PDC has done some housing production with TIF dollars for that population. The bulk of the dollars have been spent for housing above 30% of median family income. Folks who are in, I guess, folks who we would commonly refer to as the working poor. These are people who whose incomes are in the range of 30 to 60% of median family income, and they may be families where both wage earners are earning at or close to minimum wage, so they really can't afford to go out into the housing market and pay the government standard, which is 30% of their income, for rent and utilities, and have enough left over for food and clothes and necessities. Beyond that, there has been significant tax increment financing invested in housing above 60% MFI, between 60 and 80, some of your higher-end rental housing, some first-time homebuyer units. I think the thing that is critical to point out is beyond the TIF dollars that are invested directly in housing, for instance, let's take the Pearl District, which we call the River District in PDC parlance. The River District actually had a fairly decent set-aside for affordable housing. I think if you walk the streets of the Pearl District, you would be amazed to think this is a district where there's been substantial investment in affordable housing. The reason for that is where we go out and do urban renewal, particularly where we are doing it in neighborhoods where there is not a lot of housing stock, we have a stimulating effect on the housing market. We pave streets, we do business and economic development. That attracts investment, and so even without tax increment financing resources, we see developers who benefit tremendously from the investment in TIF of TIF in infrastructure. So, which is even more reason why we need the set aside, because I guess the point I'm really trying to make here is that without a direct investment, if we see the production of predominantly high-end housing by the private market in areas where we are conducting urban renewal, to offset that, to create balanced neighborhoods, to create opportunities for our lowest and middle-income citizens to move into those emerging neighborhoods, to set dollars aside for the production of housing.
Andy, one of the things that came up in today's PDC Commission meeting was a question raised by the new PDC board chair, Mark Rosenbaum, that it seemed like the question that he was getting at is affordable housing now, and a number of other community groups have said we want at least half of this set aside to go to those at that area that you were talking about, below 30% median family income, the highest level of need. And it seemed like Commissioner Rosenbaum was raising a question of, if we put that high a percentage of the set-aside towards this lowest income, do we have enough of the other resources so that we can actually use that much and provide the needed affordable housing? What's your opinion on that question?
I haven't spoken directly to Chair Rosenbaum to fully understand premise, so I can't speak for him, and I'd like to have a chance to understand that better. As I understand the argument that it's been made, is traditionally our model for local investment in housing is to leverage our local investment with outside resources. Primarily in the last few years, the most prevalent outside resource is the federal low-income housing tax credit. Those resources are limited. They are allocated to the state of Oregon by the federal government. The state of Oregon then allocates those credits regionally around the state, and the allocation for Portland is limited in any given year, which means that our traditional model of highly leveraging our investment with outside resources may be limited. But that doesn't mean that we can't invest local resources in housing that is deeply affordable. We're just going to have to work harder to create new models, and we're frankly going to have to spend more dollars per unit to create housing at the lowest rungs on the economic ladder.
So
I think it needs to be factored in and thinking about, well, isn't that too expensive or would require too much of a local investment? We already know that the cost of not making that investment on our public resources and public infrastructure in the form of the development and operation of homeless shelters, the burden that it places on local law enforcement, emergency rooms, mental health care, all of these costs go up when we have a sector of the population that's very low income and predominantly disabled who are left homeless. So it may be a higher investment than we're used to making, but it's probably an investment that in the long run is cost effective.
I'd like to ask sort of a rhetorical question. Given that reality of cuts to federal funding, how is that reconciled with the all the rhetoric around ending homelessness in 10 years? Could you comment on that?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that question. Can you repeat that?
Well, there's a lot of promotion around ending homelessness in 10 years, you know, the 10-year plan. And people tend to overlook the reality that there are these cuts to, for example, Hope 6 and all the rest of it for low-income housing. And there seems to be an obvious collision there. And I was wondering if you could sort of comment on the frustration that trying to address the needs of homeless people or near homeless folks and to avoid the kinds of problems that you were just mentioning when the reality is that there are all these cuts at the federal level.
Yeah, the fact is it is getting harder and harder, but at the same time I think we remain hopeful because we have newer models of doing that work that are faster and more effective. If I could make an analogy to healthcare, it may be that the treatment costs are going up, but the success rate and the recovery rate and the reoccurrence rate is going down, which says, yes, it's harder and harder to do it, but every dollar we invest has been more effective than dollars we've spent in the past to address the problem. In the last 18 months, we've moved roughly 800 to 900 people who have been chronically homeless, which means their home has been the streets for the last several years. We've moved them off the streets into permanent housing through some of these new approaches and through the development of this very deeply affordable housing which has services attached. We need revenue schemes that are going to fund this kind of work well beyond this set-aside. It alone, the set-aside alone, that's where we think we need to go. But it is a good start. We need something at the state and federal level that's going to reinvigorate our public approach to affordable housing, to homelessness, and ending homelessness, to providing needed services for people who have spent their life on the streets and have had their health and well-being needs ignored. So we need that, there's no doubt, and it's frustrating to try to do this this work in the current climate. But you know, and in some cases, the burden of addressing these needs being turned over from the federal government to the local government.
Well, Andy, we have a couple more minutes before we have to go to pledge break, but there's one other thing that I was hoping that you could share with our listeners, which is if we can get this set aside in place, particularly with that 50% serving below 30 in the lower income, could you talk about, you know, one of the things is a lot of our conversation in the policy languages talks about median income levels. It talks about, you know, target populations and percentages. Could you talk a little bit about who lives in some of the type of housing that could be developed where the set-aside put into place?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think one of the challenges in this whole debate has been to humanize that need. I was at a meeting last night around a project that was developed, not with TIF funds, but with local housing funds that we were able to obtain through the generous support of our city council for affordable housing. And the meeting was between a neighborhood association that had some questions and concerns and fears about the existence within their neighborhood of a project that included 40-some-odd units for very low-income people coming out of homelessness. Some of them were coming out of the correction system. And I've been working with this neighborhood association and with this the residents of this project for years. And the thing that changed the dynamic from an us-them dynamic and really created success that was culminated last night with the endorsement by the neighborhood of a good neighbor agreement with this project was the presence of the residents. I think sometimes we forget that affordable housing houses real people who are you know, facing challenges that probably all of us have had some touch with directly or indirectly through friends and family members, facing a battle with substance abuse or addiction, facing a battle with mental illness that is, you know, has been treated but may come back and may impair somebody's ability to hold down a job or lead the kind of life that you and I may imagine everyone should be able to lead. Families with children who are just trying to eke out a basic, stable home life and, you know, do things like celebrate birthdays and holidays and have a family dinner around a table that is going to be there tomorrow and the next day. So, you know, there is no us and them when it comes to affordable housing. The people who live in these projects are our friends, our neighbors, family members. They're all somebody's family member. They're all somebody's children. And got it in the back. And so the human element is something that we absolutely can't ignore. It's what this is all about. You know, you're right, Michael. You and I in particular have been in conversations where we talk about numbers and targets and goals, but at the end, what this comes down to is people. And, you know, people need a home. They need a home to be able to go home to at night after doing whatever it is they do during the day, a place that's a sanctuary, a place that's... a place that's stable, a place that's consistent and going to be there, and a foundation that, you know, we all, if we were lucky enough to grow up in. It may not look the same as the one that we grew up in, but it can at least provide something that's warm, safe, stable, and it's going to be there tomorrow.
Well, Andy, thank you very much for participating with us tonight. Have a good rest of your evening, and we appreciate your time on the show. And for our cable listening audience, we are back to Pledge Central, and I'm hoping to hear about a lot of phones ringing.
We'd like you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside the City of Roses, it's toll-free at 1-877-500-KABU. And now we're joined once again by Marlise and Jamie, who will tell you more about Membership Central.
Well, we're going to have to make up for lost time.
Because
we want to hear those phones ring for the next 7 minutes, solid wall to wall, because we have folks here that are waiting.
And we realize this is, you know, one of the quieter times during the day.
It
we
is.
Know people
mm-hmm.
are very busy. They're
people
coming home from work. They're coming home taking care of business. And we have a $300 goal that we want to meet, and we would like for you to support the program by calling 503-232-8818.
Empower yourself. Empower us. 503-232-8818 or toll-free outside this local area?
Is 1-877-500-KBOO. You know, listening to this discussion, I want to thank you guys for having this discussion about affordable housing, because once again, Jamie and I were talking about what are the basic necessities, food, clothing, and shelter.
Yes, and I always miffed about how people talk about, oh, the cost of housing is going down, or the price of housing is going down, and the bubble's going to burst. Why do people treat housing as a commodity? Something to drive the price up, drive people out of their homes.
It happens a lot. Mm-hmm. And
food,
you know,
clothing, and shelter.
Yep, the three basic, and it's very important to be involved in that. I think, you know, it's, sometimes we forget that we actually do have something to say. We can attend meetings. We can listen to what's happening. And that's what KBOO does. It provides a connecting point so that people know where to go and where to get the information so that they have, they're informed and they have something to say when they go and become active in these fields.
And as was pointed out in the program that's ongoing right now, the hole in the bucket, everyone deserves a warm, safe, stable environment. And just like KBOO, we're warm, we're stable, we're safe. We're stable as long as you give us a call and pledge, you know, help us to meet our pledge drive. Goal this time around, $175,000. 503-232-8818. You should call now.
And?
Why? Because you're listening, and you're probably sitting there at the table or in the living room or wherever talking about housing.
And what it takes is everyone working together a little bit. I know that Lisa Loving has this saying, you know, one hour of your wage a month, pledge it to KBOO. So if you work for, you know, $8 an hour or $6 an hour or $20 an hour, pledge that to KBOO. That's your KBOO hour. And I think that's a really great way of putting it, because sometimes if you pledge that amount, then you can say, you know what, I'm going to work my KBOO hour right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, the number there is 503-232-8818. Are we going back, Noah?
In about 75 seconds we are. I want to reiterate the number really quickly, 503-232-8818.
Well, one thing real quickly that we haven't mentioned, that if you're on the web, and who's not on the web, www.kboo.fm, quick and easy there.
And I want to thank you, Jamie Heim, for coming back to visit
us. Great.
And
Jace,
you're still part of our community as news director here. And here you are. And thank you for the show on affordable housing. I've definitely gotten so much out of it, being interested in it. Noah?
I concur. Again, we want you to get on the phone. Call 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside the Portland metropolitan area, 1-877-500-KBOO. And again, you know, we are a community station. I mean, we proliferate, you know, the voice of the community, like dandelion seeds. We spread everywhere. We bring you voices from the labor. We bring you voices from arts and humanities. We give you great music. And DJ Audio, in fact, just came in here, and he'll be coming up right next after they conclude. So 503-232-8818. And now back to you.
All right. So, we're about to wrap up our Hole in the Bucket show tonight. I'm going to just one more time for the listeners out there. If you want to know more about this set-aside, you can contact me, Michael Anderson, at 503-335-9884. If you're ready to say, boy, we need a set-aside in the city, these guys are right on, just email the mayor directly. That's mayorpotter@ci.portland.or.us, and say, thank you, Mayor, for the 30% set-aside. But let's put in some accountability guidelines. That would be a big favor that all you listeners could do to help advance this important cause. But we talked a lot about policy. Now we're going to go right back to that human element, and in particular to what is a sad mark on our city, that happened in the Pearl District. Too short ago, but already fading into the past. Jay, please bring our listeners up to speed.
Right. Not long ago, James Chassie was stomped in the Pearl, 13th in Everett. And I guess the comment that I want to make is to public outrage is extensive and keen right now, and we don't want to waste that. Again, I would like to encourage people to address Mayor Potter about this. Mayor Potter and Chief Sizer have both pointed to the mental health system as the thing that needs to be addressed. They're diverting attention from the need for fundamental changes in accountability for the police. This was not just a tragedy. It's something that's been continuing. Mahia Pooch should have been sufficient a couple of years ago to really prompt real change. It's really frustrating to think about what we can do. We can vigil, we can write letters to the editor, but at the end of the day, we want to push for real change about consequences for cops who do this kind of thing. And the James Chassie situation was really stunning, because this was a prolonged stomping. More than 16 ribs were broke multiple times. His lung was punctured. They didn't tell the paramedics. They apparently didn't tell the intake nurse, and I wasn't there, so I might be mistaken about the intake nurse, but that they had tasered this person to the extent of their physical dealings with him. And the person died. This was Andy Miller a moment ago talked about, when all is said and done, it's not about numbers, it's about human beings. And so I would encourage people to do two things. One, there's an excellent website, Mental Health Portland, spelled out, one word, mentalhealthportland.org, has a complete collection of the media coverage, including transcripts from the TV, and memoirs of people who knew James Chassie. And also email your outrage to Mayor Potter and say that setting up a committee is kind of what amounts to a delaying action, whatever the intention is. It just keeps pushing this thing off so that it fades and that public outrage dissipates. We can't accept that. We need to have this thing addressed now, and something real has to be done. Mayor Potter can be reached at Mayor Potter, spelled out one word, at ci.portland.or.us. And I would like to point out that James Chassie was a remarkable person. He knew a lot of people in Portland. He wasn't just some non-entity that sort of came and went. Interesting, the Portland Mercury has some interesting coverage. In fact, an audio clip of a song that James Chassie sang with the Possum Society's punk album, Flies Like Holidays. You might check out their website and listen to that. Crazy Cat Grows Big Feet. I'm reminded of Larry Wildman Fisher in the movie Derailroaded, who was taken under the wing of Frank Zappa. He was a person dealing likewise with schizophrenia, et cetera. Very, just a very colorful person. You see a person who is stomped by the police without consequence. It's just absolutely unconscionable. So please contact the mayor, Mayor Potter, at ci.portland.or.us. And for a full coverage of this, check out mentalhealthportland.org. Thank you.
Good evening and good night from Hole in the Bucket. This has been Michael Anderson and Jay Thiemeyer.